This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with dancer choreographer Suhaili Michelin. We are heading into the third show in our series on contemporary dance. In the first show, we talked about the move from classical dancing, and in this case ballet, which originated in Italy in the 15th century, and how that evolved into modern dance and from the latter into contemporary dance. In the second week, Suhaili, together with her guest, Failul Adam, took us a little bit deeper into the impulses and ideas which brought about the changes and the manifestation of these changes as the dance evolved. We touch on contact improvisation as contributing to contemporary dance. Continuing this week, Suhaili will share with us on what to pay attention to when attending a contemporary dance performance, which seems to suggest, Suhaili, that there are things very specifically to look at. A lot of dancers will just say to me, just go enjoy it. Don't worry about what it is and just enjoy it.
Yes,
a bit too abstract for me.
I do understand. I mean, from a dancer's perspective and also as a performer, to actually also understand the audience perspective, mainly it was a new viewer being part of the scene, which is to attend the show. Again, it's two different parties, and the middle person that has to link both of these two parties, one on stage and one sitting there, would be obviously the choreographer, the maker, the director that actually puts all of this together, because it only takes one glance or one look at what this work represents, whether it's that performer, you know, the artistic view of what the given choice of what the visual looks like, the given idea on how you attract an audience to participate, which obviously is to buy a ticket and to attend. And of course, the familiarity of how it is going to be presented can also be a huge factor.
When you're putting this together, how conscious are you of the audience? Or do you just say, I'm just creating this, and you don't even think about the audience?
Actually, this topic, it's very interesting, and I needed to bring it up because it has been a difficult task that I have been focusing on when I make a work. Even before of thinking of what I want to do, my end goal is to understand, how do I make the audience appreciate it? You know, I'm not expecting them to love it, or every one of them, because everyone has a different opinion about it. But I'm trying to engage new eyes, new faces amongst the audience. Because let's face it, dance industry is already a niche thing for people to come to a show. So let alone to actually have more engagement of the unfamiliarity, you know, the thing that not many people want to, you know, attend.
Yeah, if somebody goes to a dance and they don't understand it, after a while, a wall goes up and they stop attending.
Yes.
As a former teacher of writing, one of the principles we try to express to students who are learning how to write is that you are always writing with an audience in mind. It could be literally, because I'm dispensing information to people out there, that is the audience. You need to ask yourself, what does this person already know? What are this person's biases or prejudices or whatever? But then you have some fiction writers. Some would say, I don't write for anybody but myself.
That's quite common for choreographers as well. But personally, for me, it's a responsibility. Again, it comes down to, how are you going to continue work if your engagement is poor? And that is one of the most fundamental elements for you to get grants for productions, for future productions, for future works. Because essentially, the ones that's going to pay you is the audience. The one that is going to support your reviews is the audience. And regardless whether you are writing for your, you know, yes, I understand, choreographer, I want to make the work, is because it's my work.
You have something to say.
I want to convey something. I don't need to always follow what the people want. Yes, but that's why there's a big difference between a dance choreographer and a smart choreographer who knows how to play, you know, that feel of like, how do I make it approachable? And yet it has to definitely be truly my own way of presenting.
Do you think as a choreographer, you have that responsibility to engage?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because that's how you increase interest whenever you have the next future performance. I have gone through a series of performances. They can be very bad. I have gone through reviews that can be very nasty. And I have gone through productions that have been very, very encouraging. You know, there's a balance of everything. But if you just keep going to understand how the graph of your performance and your credibility in your work is being assessed, if I put it that way, assessed by the audience, then you will eventually have a new team of followers.
In some ways, answering this question, what do you want to do as a choreographer? In some ways, it's also an existential question, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Because all of us, whether we are artists or not artists, we are trying to be ourselves. But we are not in the world by ourselves. Yes. We still have to engage with other people. And the question is, where do we want to engage and how do we want to engage? I suppose there will always be people who say, I don't care about this world. I want to go have my little Walden Pond and stay in my little hut.
Yeah.
As opposed to, if I'm staying in my hut, I'm not part of the human race. At least I'm not taking responsibility for anything but myself. And some say, I want to engage. And once you engage, you have to ask the question, how much of myself am I willing to compromise, right?
Yeah, I would. I actually feel that when choreographers do want to express something, especially the young emerging ones, sometimes we can call it as self-absorbed. And sometimes if they are being interviewed or if they were asked to express their content, it's not clear because they're not clear with what they want. And these are just the raw ones coming out. And we still encourage them, like, yes, keep expressing yourself. You know, I had a little discussion with another friend of mine about how do you express yourself beyond your bodies? Because we are choreographers, we are dancers. The natural thing for you to just express what you want is just from body experimentation, which is moving in space or engaging with another partner. But, you know, the downfall of most dancers is to express themselves properly verbally, you know, to engage with. Obviously, not everyone can understand the human body. And that's why it's our duty to be more articulate. Yes, articulate to really get them to see what you see. Because I understand a lot of artists are always wanting to introduce their world. And it's frustrating because there was never a bridge.
I mean, the very fact that you have used the word, they want to introduce their world. Introduce to whom?
Yeah. They want to engage with people who can understand them. And that's
small
a selfish act. Yeah. And that's a selfish act because they're expecting audience to just get it, you know, like snap the fingers and yeah, you know. Just get it. But they don't realize the circumstances that they're putting themselves in. It's a huge risk without proper initiatives. So that's why I've been trying to engage. I've been trying to research, okay, how do I actually get my work to be manifested?
What tools are you using as a choreographer?
When I've been assessing what audience would look out for, they are very interested in seeing works that are beyond the norm, of course, be just not bodies on stage. So they like, because of what, you know, movies are coming up with, these extra CGI effects, we try to make our version of CGI effects through projections. Body mapping. But how do we contextualize it?
As dancers, though, you have a foundation. And the foundation,
yes.
I understand it, you have space. and you are dealing with time and movement. That's your primary.
And sound, music and sound.
Sound, yeah.
That's the basic foundation. And for most choreographers, they already have an idea. Like they have a basic pattern form already because of maybe habit and style. But like I said, you can always create a work. But how do we create a masterpiece? Anyone can draw a tree and a bird or something. How do you
create a tree that engages?
How do you make it further? How do you enhance something that's just something that we just pass by every day? It's very, very difficult nowadays for anyone to just say something that has been heard before. That's why research and development, we always say R&D. And because of YouTube, very easily plagiarized without having to even be, you know.
Yeah, it's very easy to be derivative, to also be reductive. So when I see some of the performances, I say this looks like a Pina Bausch.
Yeah, I've seen this. It looks so familiar. And then you it's so easy. You click something and you find the link and that's it. You've done a work like this. Consider this work as
your own
originality. You know, people would just post a link and say, so how do you explain this? So again, it's very dangerous if you don't do research and development. Because like I said, every choreographer has a flaw and has a pattern. Like they map out what their works are going to be.
For some of these original choreographers, they seem to have their own trademarks, characteristics that you can say, this is a Merce Cunningham move. This is a stylistic
move.
Yeah, this is a Martha Graham. This is an Isadora Duncan. Mm. We'll talk about that. I'm speaking with Suhaili Michelin, choreographer, dancer. We're talking about how do choreographers articulate in such a way that while it is important for them to do something new, at the same time, not so alienating. We'll look at some contemporary choreographers and see what they have done to make their particular work characteristic. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng speaking with Suhaili Michelin, choreographer, dancer. And we've been talking about choreographing a dance, and from the perspective of the audience, what is it that choreographers want you to pay attention to so that you at least walk away with something?
Something to talk about.
Yeah, something
and
to talk
about. And not just to like, thank God, I need to go home and I just need to take a bath.
For me, even when you like a dance, yeah, I like it. If that's all you can say, it's also not very useful. That's why, when you went to dance school, what kinds of dance theories did you have to learn so that they will inform your own choreography?
When I studied in Melbourne, the essential tools, we put it, is under the subject composition. For those 3 to 4 years, we were introduced to different lecturers of different backgrounds. When we first started composition, Robert Ray, who taught us Vaganova Ballet, a very strict Russian technique in class, was also our composition teacher. And he introduced us to how do you work with a partner, the methods of creating works were very ballet-based. He is influenced by the Russian ballet, of course. He worked at the Australian ballet at that time. And also he is very influenced by Balanchine's works. So again, it all depends on the background of who is actually training you. Obviously, because then the second year got us to a little bit more contemporary-based choreographer and teacher, and then so on and so forth. It's just got a little bit more abstract, further away from what ballet and modern, as was my training was before.
But what did they tell you? Like in the classroom, they say, okay, this is what this choreographer is doing, and then explain the idea behind it. So that you can say, I am going to explore further this movement or this idea that I can tweak it, I can change it, I can bend it, break it.
Yeah. Like, given exercises that we learn on tools, for instance, pull and release, how do you engage with another partner? So we'll be formed in groups. And this is the most interesting part because it's a 3-hour class and you're given ample time to create a few mini series of what that specific topic is. So for instance, pull and release. Okay. Very interesting. Some people take it literally, pull and release, by just using, for instance, just their hands. And that's how they communicate, pull and release. Okay, so how do I feature this whole task with their bodies? Or then there's others that actually just write down a piece of paper and then show it to us. The thing is, once you create all these little sequences, you are encouraged to show, feature it to your fellow friends. And after each of these group were to perform it, put it as perform it in the space, we have a session where we talk about it, Q&A, what the different things that you see, what is the most common thing, what is the non-common thing, and then you trigger more questions to the choreographers who are also the dancers to make them understand what is it that they have, why did they investigate in that, why did they invest that specific movement together.
When you talk about pull and release, my first thoughts were actually about contraction and release. Is that pull and release?
That could be. See, again, there is no...
Nothing definitive.
Yes, there's no rule. Again, this is how we understand how audience could easily be manipulated in their minds, you know, what they read and what they visualize before they watch a show. The beauty of trying to create movements within that class is to really reflect upon what you're saying and why you're suggesting this.
As a choreographer, do you begin with an idea or do you begin with the movement itself and say, I want a dance with this particular movement and repeat it? Or do you say, I'm seeing this issue is being discussed. We marginalize people with physical challenges. I want to do a dance about that. And then that idea drives it. Is there, which comes first?
There's no law, there's no rule to that. But it's very common for dance makers to always be influenced by what they see or what they hear or that affects their emotions. That's very, very common. And again, I always get intrigued by what is the uncommon traits. That's why I like to go for a different way of approaching. So to answer to your question, I do both. I like to create movements that is just from nothing, you know, even from it sounds crazy, weird, but even starting from a toenail. That's how I start investigating movements. Like, what else can I see in my body besides the usual thing that we usually learn in composition? That's why the encouragement for you, see it further in depth of what you can form. There's a performance coming up and I'm to choreograph a duet, which I'm involved in. I feel that this is really difficult because I have to choreograph it on myself as well. Now, the problem with me as a choreographer is I cannot learn as a dancer from the choreographer, who is me. I'm the most stubborn one, you know, to be taking
the instructions from yourself.
Yeah, it's so tricky. So and that's a bad habit. I like to do it the other way around. I like to emphasize the strengths and the beauty of what other bodies could complement in my work. I manifest it that way. So when I started working on this and knowing that I have a few habits to move as well, I have to always keep in mind that I want to steer away from what my usual movements are that people always say, it's so beautiful, it's so lyrical, it's so expressive. Yes, I understand that. I appreciate the comments and compliments, but I need to start making new, weird, awkward, uncomfortable movements to make sure that, again, it goes back to getting my audience, I would say.
Where does music fit into your choreography or anybody's choreography? Because in contemporary dance, sometimes there is no music.
Yes.
Sometimes there is music. Mm. Sometimes it's music made by people thumping on their bodies or slapping on the floor. or sometimes it's just the breath making a noise, it doesn't have to be even like regular.
Yeah, irregular, yeah. I always think that music to me is heavy influence. I can speak on behalf of a lot of choreographers. I like to make things difficult. So I always like to pick on things that we are strongly fed or that we feed on, because, you know, that encourages you to have more challenges and obstacles. But you are progressing when all these things gets a bit more tough to be served on the plate.
I've listened to some contemporary music and I tell the composer, I just cannot stand this stuff because I'm just hearing what I would consider just sonics. We think of music as having a certain rhythm, a certain pattern. Mm. And because traditionally dance is accompanied by music, so we see patterns, we see repetitions, we see a flow.
Mm.
But contemporary is so, sometimes can be so jarring.
Yeah. And very disappointing that you just want to go home or you just want to get up. But actually, that won't depend on music to start my work. But I know that given time, some people make works at a very short time. They actually depend a lot on the flow of music and the phrasing and the beat and all that, just so that they are in a safe zone that when this work is finally revealed, the audience won't be criticizing, you know.
I guess what you're saying is that music provides an organizing principle.
A safety net.
Yeah, and when you choreograph your dance based on a known piece of music or music that we understand, then one part of it helps make the dance understandable or accessible.
For sure, because everyone still attends Philharmonic concert, for instance, to watch an orchestra play. There was one time where Philip Glass created juxtaposing scores, that the whole point, that you finally understand that the whole point why he's creating that score is to get people to get up and leave the theatre. That was his intention, without having to reveal it. And he actually felt that was successful because I just wanted to see how long they can sit on their seats and just engage in the music.
I guess he was challenging expectations.
Exactly. Which was, you start thinking about, oh, that is brilliant. Like, why would you make something like that when you have credibility of creating very abstract music, but still able to digest?
I would hate him because I would have paid all that money just to go in and listen to something that's forcing him to get out.
And yet you would still listen to his scores. I think that's how you establish to be a brilliant artist.
Maybe as a summary, somebody's going to see a contemporary dance. What are some things to look out for? Perhaps like something, find an idea behind it? The music, if it's possible. Text. Not that these are at any time going to be present for you to just pick on, but open yourself up to these kinds of things.
Maybe because the industry is so small, I think a message particularly for the new viewers, you know, or people who've been interested, but, you know, they don't have a gang to go with. You know, if you have that courage to go by yourself, I highly encourage you to, first of all, check out, of course, the content of the work. What's it about? Get the summary of what the work is. Get a rough idea of what you can visualize, but don't give any form of high expectations yet, as you have not seen it before. But come in with an open mind. Everything that you try, everything that is new, that you want to actually just have a look or to actually experience, would be actually of a certain value in your life, I feel, because it's going to affect you in some sort of way, you know, after that show, you know, whether it's great or not great for you, but it's going to be a memory. That's why sometimes, whether you understand it or not, it will somehow resonate with you later part of your life or something that you've seen online, because that's how artists create moments. They give you a moment for you to share that they can share with you. They hope that it could bring some sort of trigger, whether you've not experienced it or not, but maybe something that would actually...
ring a bell.
Yeah.
Recall a memory.
Yeah.
We've been talking about contemporary dance, and if you have questions that you'd like to pose to us, just write to The Bigger Picture, bfm.my, and we'll try to answer them. But before we leave you, I'd like to quote from an American dance critic, Edwin Denby, who once wrote that seeing dance is about getting drunk on a performance, then being able to talk about it rationally afterwards. I hope that this interview, this discussion here, this conversation here has given you some ways, you know, looking at how the dancers use the space, some idea that's there, or the rhythms, the music that's being used, how bodies move in space. Enjoy it, think about it, and then if you can articulate to yourself what you have seen, I think that's more than enough. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with Suhaili Michelin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.